Hi, Warwick.
G'day, Nick. G'day, listeners. What do you got for us today, Coxie?
Oh, I was looking for something a little topical after a few of our clients have been talking about this particular thing this week. So, clients, if you're listening, I hope you appreciate I went deep for you today. Warwick, what did the termite say when it walked into a bar?
No.
Where's the bartender?
G'day, I'm Woz.
And I'm Nick, sometimes Coxie, mostly Nick.
This is the Tradies in Business podcast, and we're here to share a bunch of tips, ideas, tactics that you can put in place to get change happening in your trade business right now.
If you're really lucky, we're going to entertain you with a few mum jokes, and more importantly, a bunch of fantastic guests that will educate you in all things you need to know about trade business, but we do promise to do it with a whole bunch of fun along the way.
I'm a self-confessed idiot, so strap yourself in and enjoy another episode. Oh, no, it's another one of these ones where my brain is just not picking it up. Hey, I'm obviously thinking down a track.
Okay, so tender as in I'm going to serve you over the bar, and tender as in the woods, really tender to eat for a termite?
Oh, okay.
Oh, come on.
I'm going to have to work harder on that one, Nick. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you really are.
Listeners, feel free to write in and tell me how stupid I am. Welcome to another episode of the Tradies in Business podcast. I think the best thing about those jokes when I don't get them, it always seems to happen when we have a guest on the program that I really want to impress. And it could be why this podcast is not working for us, Nick, is because I don't get your jokes.
Perhaps we should just ban the jokes.
All right, we do have a guest with us today who is very patient, and I think that could be a good segue into what's going on with his business. We've just helped him find a solution to some tech issues to join us on the podcast. Troy Udall, welcome to the podcast,
Nick,
mate.
Thanks for having me. You had me thinking, Nick. I was thinking tender as in the timber timber, so maybe I spend too much time with tradies. That's
maybe. Now, Troy, our listeners love to know about the people that we chat with. Obviously, haven't given away your business yet. We'll let you do the intro, mate. Sure. Who are you, Troy?
So we are, and I am, Troy, Totally Workwear. Totally Workwear as a business, franchise business, 90 stores around Australia, serving tradies that hopefully are listening to this podcast for all manner of workwear, trade, safety, uniform, gear. My job is to look after that franchise system and the franchisees that run it. There's about 38 of those around the country running those 90 stores, and obviously all of the great brands that we stock and sell. And then there's me, the human, father of three kids. Twins in amongst that. So I've been a pretty busy last 10 years for me. They're 10 years old. So, have I been around this brand 10 years thereabouts? And in some ways, pretty unique outcome. I worked 5 years for the franchisees, as sort of a contract consulting capacity, and I've worked another 5 years for the franchisor. So you could say I've seen both sides of the fence, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's not.
Which is the best side, Troy?
Oh, that's like asking for my favorite. I had Limo ask me that at a conference last year, who's my favorite franchisee. And I said, easy, it was Sarah. I just answered very quickly. I was unpopular for that. Look, to me, it's about the brand, to be honest with you. It's got to work for the franchisor. It's got to work for the franchisee. The business doesn't work well if either one of those parties are pulling hard against each other. If you've got them on the same court, then it works. So it's a Switzerland answer was, but I try and play a straight bat down the middle because ultimately I have to make sure that brand's successful.
Nice.
I had no idea that it was a franchised company. I had just made an assumption that there was just the one brand. It was, well, and there is, and I hadn't realized that the stores were owned by individuals.
Yeah, so hopefully that means the marketing's working, Nick, and that the brand presence is strong. So we always say that customer and consumer first, right? So we talk about consumers in the context of people coming in and buying that one pair of boots with a credit card transaction, and obviously we do a lot of work directly with businesses, tradies that own large scale operations or construction companies rather, and we refer to them as our customers, and those two lenses are what matters. So as long as they see consistent service outcomes, because of brand outcomes, how we run the business in the background is done in the background. And as far as the customer and consumer, they just see a great brand and great value proposition. But yeah, we have 37 investors. They're all pretty long term. So our system is definitely not a churn and burn system that makes money out of fees and royalties on our franchisees. In fact, we don't have either of those things, which makes it a pretty unique value proposition. And yeah, they're long term because it's a good business. It's pretty stable. You know, we've built out. We're 30 years old this year. We're going to have a dirty 30s party, hopefully later in the year. And I think that long-term consistent performance, we're in a lot of segments too. So not many businesses that play in all segments. You know, we're in construction, we're in residential type trade, we're in hospitality, we're in healthcare, we're in anything that you wear to work. So as the economy peaks and troughs, and perhaps we're in one of the troughs now more so than the peaks, we tend to have an offering for somebody, which is helps keep a pretty stable keel on the business.
Right, given that you are in so many sectors of the market, how do you create your offering for any one of those particular sectors?
Yeah, with a great deal of hard work. Yeah. It is a broad business that we are sort of 80% tradie and commercial. So we talk about zones within our stores or pillars within our brand as trade safety and uniforms. That's sort of what's on the front door. When you sort of look into that, the non-high-vis wearing tradies that come to your house, your chippies, brickers, recently we called them plummies, or asked why they weren't called plummies in one of our creatives, because it is an oddity in that. Those subsectors all come and shop that non-high-vis, trendy, tradie. Has become a lot more trendy, let me tell you. Earlier on, it was a lot more basic, but now there's a bit of a fashion show going on in the tradie world as well. And then on that commercial side, it's more of a safety component, right? You need to be safe on site. You need to meet certain standards. And so whilst there is room for a level of, do I look good in this? The primary objective is, does it work? And will it keep you safe? So yeah, you have got to look at your industry sectors. We're very, very cognizant of industry view. And then the subsectors we spend a lot of time on. And then who shops those subsectors? What are our people? What are the personas that live in the plumber's world or in the chippies world or in the brickies world? And how are they different potentially from those that are on a construction site, a lend lease site or whatever? Doing the high biz thing.
It's a lot of questions to answer just so somebody can walk in and buy a uniform.
We could simplify it with just, we sell anything you want to wear to work. That's helpful. But there is a lot of segments to the market. There's a lot of segments to each industry. And Ray, my marketing manager, is not with us today, but has done a hell of a lot of work on what we've done with this brand. That consumer segmentation, that consumer first lens, and having a clear value proposition, really important. How you educate 37 different owners on that is equally a challenge. Because it's, when you work at the franchise head office level, you're in it all day, every day. When you're the investor and you're running your shop, you're potentially not got that lens at all times. And so it's a big job in communication and education and training and bringing them along for the journey. But we must be doing something okay if they're not leaving, which is good.
I imagine it's a pretty competitive market, Troy. And you talked earlier about brand, you know, our perception that it was a corporate business, you know, corporate-owned stores Australia-wide, when in fact it's a franchise, is a good sign that the Totally Workwear brand itself is what's recognised, not sort of the business owners, which a lot of our listeners aspire to, is have a business that deals with their customers, not the tradie.
Yeah.
What's been some of the, I guess, keys to that strong brand position out there when you've got other big players in the market, in that workwear market?
Yeah, look, that's a good question. We spent a lot of time redoing that in recent years. So we launched this new brand or new version of Totally Workwear in August last year. And we're sort of 9 months into how that's going to market. And we obviously already had strong brand positioning, but first and foremost, you need to know what you are, what your offering is, what your point of difference is. If you're a tradie in business now, and for your audience, and you're looking at your business and wanting to stand apart from the next guy, then you need to have a really clear value proposition for your brand. And you know, it sounds cliche or out of a marketing textbook, but having a clear vision, having a clear mission, having a clear customer value proposition, and then what are the pillars? What's the moat around your strategy? What's going to set you apart from everybody else? And we spent a lot of time working that out, and it didn't just come from us. You know, we were in shops doing secret store outcomes. We're doing, you know, working groups of tradies all around the country, from Dubbo to Sydney to Brisbane to Perth to Adelaide, to really know how they viewed us. Because it's great to know how you view yourself in the mirror, but ultimately you need to know how they view you. Yeah. And then build out some pillars that go, right, well, what is it they're looking for in the experience? And start from that. You sort of said comes across as a brand that is consistent. Our approach is that if we can nail the consumer experience really consistently, then we'll win with the locally owned, tradie owned entrepreneurial outcome. Right? You don't get that from a corporate. You know, you walk into one of our stores and you will be greeted in the first couple of seconds. There's a good chance you're going to deal with the owner when you've got an account. You know, the stores are locally involved with the footy clubs, and they're sponsoring the, you know, the local Rotary or the Variety Bash or you name it. And they do that all as part of the community. They don't brag about it. You don't hear them talk about it. You know, we don't even do a great job profiling, if I'm honest. But that locally owned and operated piece is the key point of difference. So if you can do everything that a corporate entity can do, then your point of advantage is to win with the locally owned piece. If you're entirely corporate, you can't get to there. It's a secret piece of kit that we have that you don't have. And that's been really critical. So fair bit in that. There's probably more, but I hope that gives you a bit of an idea of the level to which we've gone. To work out what we are and what we represent to the guys and girls that come in and shop with us.
I think there's some great lessons for our listeners. Despite the fact that we're talking to a workwear business, and you know, you're a franchise, some of our tradiepreneurs, our clients, are former franchisees within their trade. And I think, you know, some people might be listening to this going, well, what the hell's this got to do with me running my trade business? And in fact, there's a heck of a lot in chatting with you, Troy, and the whole franchise model, systems, brand, people. I mean, essentially you're running a big team in your franchisees who also have team. But it's also about that differentiation piece. So I'll come all the way around to a question here. Is some of the problems, or one of the big problems that our listeners and our clients face, is price pressure from the big operators, customers being educated to go for, you know, better deals and cheaper prices and faster service, all that sort of stuff. How does Totally Workwear, you know, swing your bat in the same field as some of the big players who must be, you know, getting cheaper product and running tighter margins than your franchisees can?
Yeah, it's the old adage, cheap versus good value. You always try and separate those two things. Value can be measured in, I guess, a more broader sense. So it's a value encompasses price, but it also encompasses durability and service and reliability and after-sales service and all of those outcomes, timeliness. You know, it's better value that we're hoping to provide our customers. We would never stand there and say that we are the cheapest. And we have no desire to be. You have to have equity in the brand value proposition. So you can't just sort of say that's what you are. You have to walk the talk and deliver. For your audience, like a good customer, bad customer, not all customers are good. And sometimes the bigger they get, the less good they are. And so there's a real sweet spot for Totally Work where we obviously buy quite well. We do have scale. That's part and parcel of the benefits, but we're really partnered with those supplier brands as well. We don't have 40,000 brands on offer in our stores. We don't need to. We need to make sure that the sector's covered, the persona's covered, the price points are covered. So if you do want to buy at $49 instead of at $129, you've got an option or multiple options that give you then, but do I want durability at that price point? Am I happy to pay a bit more because it's got more fashion component or a brand that I love? What's that in the mixer to give you that offering? And if I think about that in a tradie business context, buying well and having strong supplier partnerships is really critical. And that's obviously underpinning your margin outcomes, but making sure that arrangement is a partnership, making sure that arrangement isn't a we want, we buy, you will do, or we'll go somewhere else. And big business can kind of lose sight of that, I think, especially big corporate. And, you know, we have a long-term group of partners that make Totally Workwear successful. We have a long-term group of franchisees that make it successful. And we have a franchisor that has a vested interest in making that overall thing successful. Knowing what and where you're going to make your return is really critical. And then setting those foundations to go, right, well, we don't deviate from that pathway of partnership to the end outcome. I think that avoids the ragtag end of any market, whether that's tradies in construction bidding on contracts or whether it's us bidding on uniform programs. It's the same. You have to put value into an equity into the middle ground. And so the power of your brand, the service you provide, the people that you partner with, and the quality of your product and deliverable, that all creates value. And then that value is a discussion you're having with that potential buyer. Quite often, I jokingly use the, not my tagline, but the John West one, that the fish that John West reject is what makes John West the best. Sometimes big fish aren't necessarily better than the medium-sized ones. There's more relationship and more give and take and more understanding, more partnership, both at the customer level, same as at the supplier level.
That's right.
Troy, you mentioned those relationships and partnerships that you have from an entity point of view, and I liken the customer experience to a bit of a relationship or a partnership as well. And I guess as a corporate, or the corporate part of your company needs to have an understanding of who their clients are so that you can make choices on their behalf, which is essentially what you're doing when you're putting stock onto the floor. You've already made a choice for what you think the client might want to purchase. I can imagine that would be really complicated when you're looking at such broad sector of the market, when there are so many trades, there are so many business levels, quality is important for some, price is important for others. How does that buying part of what you're doing happen? Are there conversations with the people on the floor that are doing the work, or the people that are coming in the door, the actual customers, and feedback from them? How do those decisions get made?
Yeah, how long's this episode, Nick? but I'll give it a crack. So we have a couple of pillars in Totally Workwear. Category is one of them. I come from a category background, a wholesale sales background, a retail background, buying background. And so when you view that, and lady by the name of Monique Mays is our current category manager. She's doing a great job. She will put all of those things into the pot, for want of a better description. So we have a particular funnel that we look at that says what's the sector or the zone in the shop. Industry, sector, and zone are similar.
Yep.
So that I can make it easy for the particular person who walks in to find what they are looking for. Oh, I need high vis shirt, I'm going that way. Oh, I need a pair of new pants because the crotch is blown out in these ones, I'm going that way.
Mm-hmm.
Uncomplicate it for them. Kmart did a great job of this years ago, the corporate, but make it simple. Boots on a wall. Like, you got the high cut ones, you got the mid cut ones, you got joggers, you got specialty boots. Cool. Don't overcomplicate it. Then help me navigate on why in construction I might be more orientated towards that heavier duty boot than in trade, where I'm doing different movements and I might be more orientated to that safety runner or the lower cut boot for my comfort. When you take that, then you add brand, and then you add categories to brand, you sort of figure out how people need to shop. So the journey that they're on. Walk in the store. Pants is why I came in. I want pants, right? That's my need. But I want a brand because I love this brand or that brand because they've done a great job of influencing me. Once I've come through and found my zone, then I've found my category, then I can shop my brand, and then I can be shown some other things that I might not have considered before I walked in the door that I maybe I need, but actually more so that I want. Mm-hmm. And one of the big components of our brand change was the history of sort of saying to people, hey, get what you want and get back to work. And that stood true when workwear was a more commoditized product.
Yes.
But today it's not.
Yeah.
And so it's not about necessarily get what you want. It's get what you need is the reason mm-hmm. you're in there.
Mm-hmm.
Shop for other things that you might want.
Mm-hmm.
Make the most of the time because time's precious. Maybe it's an RDO, maybe it's a rained out day. But really, you walked in there most likely because your boots are leaking.
Yeah.
Because your pants are blown apart and you need to get back on site.
Yeah.
And so help them get there quickly is really critical. When you put those filters on,
mm-hmm.
You then mix in the personas, the industry sectors, the price points, you end up with an assortment.
Mm.
That assortment needs to pass the pub test or the data analytics test of does it tick those things?
Mm.
As a tradie, can I walk in there then and reasonably be given a choice to choose brands that I want because that's their job to make me want them?
Yes.
Products that I need with a service that happens in a way that gets me back to what's making me money, which is not standing in my shops buying products. It's doing your invoices. You know, or running your small business to the next job you've got to deliver. So yeah, there's quite a lot of things that go in that mixing pot, but there is a methodology for it. There's a hierarchy to it, and you know, I can probably stand pretty comfortable with how you navigate our website, for example, and you see the way you can get to what you need pretty efficiently. Hand up, say 2 years ago before this new platform, I would have said nightmare.
Yeah,
we are now a lot of work gone into that. Data and reviewing to make it mm-hmm. more simple for people that are in your sort of audience space.
Mm.
There's a reason I asked the question. It's because I want our listeners to understand the thought and the research and the navigation that goes behind creating that client experience when they're coming in the store. Because benefit to you as a company, but there's also a benefit to the customer. And I think you know, when we're talking to newer clients around their client experiences and mapping out a sales process and looking at how to move them from price point to solution-based marketing and experiences, it can be quite mind-blowing for them. And yet I think this is a really great example of how we're living in a world every day where we have big corporate companies that are really nutting down on what this looks like to influence the way we spend. And we have the opportunity as a small business owner to do the exact same thing. It doesn't need to be as complicated because our client base isn't as broad. We're not looking at 10 different sectors. We're servicing a very similar kind of client every time with a similar service. But we have that opportunity to create a different outcome. One thing that I didn't pick up on there, Troy, but I reckon you guys would be doing a great job of it, is the feedback from the clients when they're on the ground and they can't necessarily find the brand that they want, or they can't find the cut or the fit or something similar that they're potentially looking for. What happens with that feedback from the store on the day?
Yeah. A couple of things in that. So we have a check-in process with our franchisees every quarter. We separate that into the four or five support pillars that the franchise office that I run offers the franchisees. And we are often seeking to extract from them what's happened in relation to marketing. So maybe it was a brand experience the customer had, or maybe it was a digital experience that they had to try and extract nuggets, as we refer to them, of information or data points to influence what we do. We also, as a business, have a franchisee group, a representative group of the franchisees, and they're rotating every 2 years. So there's always an input provider that can bring the voice of the customer from the floor and then of the owner on the floor up into a very well set out and structured set of inputs. We'll use surveys with the operators as well, from suppliers' outcomes and service outcomes, customer outcomes. So there's a few different touch points, but you have to have a really structured cadence to it. If you're sort of going out asking or looking for information, you haven't thought through the end case as to why, you're just another bit of noise.
Mm-hmm.
So people need to see that they're getting value from input. Otherwise, input dries up pretty quickly. And so it doesn't matter whether that's the customer experience on the floor or the business owner's experience as part of the franchise, you have to be engaged all the time. We ran a sort of pretty simple philosophy with how we've done this change with Totally Workwear, because change is hard for everybody, particularly investors that have substantial amounts of money in the system. But evolution is necessary. And it was more like sort of like engage first, develop trust, and then evolve the business. And evolve is the key thing here. It's not revolution, it's evolution. But never put the tools down. The moment you stand still, you're going backwards. So we've got to keep that evolution in mind. And that comes from those ingredients from the shop floor. I mean, some of those shops that we did with people on iPhones, customers, to walk around to just experience it. Really powerful when you play that back to your group of franchisees to go, I know you think that your store looks okay today, but this guy or girl is not experiencing that way. Maybe think about this journey that we're going on and how that might help you there. And ultimately, everything we're doing is to better that brand and that experience for your customers, you know, tradies that are coming into it. You know, because a lot of what I've talked about in answering your questions today have been around the transformation of the business. But now it's a bit like, what does it look like for people that might want to invest in it? Like the people might be tradies now that are running successful trade businesses going, hang on, here's a business I haven't thought of. Here's a business that's also serving tradies. I know it really well. I know all the sectors. I know the products. I've worn them. Maybe I don't want to be on the tools for the next 20 years. Maybe I want to be in a business that services the sector. I know the sector. What does that business look like? And so really interested to start to get that narrative out to audiences and people that might want to have a look at a business like ours and go, wow, like it's backed by some pretty powerful business entities and brands like King G and Hard Yakka and Worker Group, which is ultimately a Wesfarmers owned business. So it's a pretty substantial framework that it sits on, but that's not your traditional model. We don't have royalties. We don't have exorbitant fees. The company only cares about one thing, and that's selling product. Yeah. And when you've got a really clear view on what you're doing, service tradies to sell product, then all of the people that are behind it, whether it's our company brands or brands that are in the marketplace, they all know what our purpose is. And so you're not trying to clip the ticket here, there, and everywhere and getting cute with it. It's kind of pretty straightforward. Own a business, you run a business, you make money out of it, you do it successfully, we give you all the tools to do it successfully, and you know, buy product, sell product. You know, sometimes I think these days, businesses have overcomplicated that value proposition conversation completely. Some value in stripping it back and getting a little more simple with it.
Absolutely. Troy, you would see successful franchisees and you would see some who find it a little more challenging to get the results, despite, you know, you guys sound like you've got a great team and a good brand and a good group of franchisees. We'll call them business owners because that's what they are, franchisees. Yeah. I think some of the stuff that our listeners and our clients and tradie business owners in general perhaps struggle with is the difference between being good at what they do and being good at running a business. I think, you know, you could be a great retailer but not be great at owning a retail business and running a retail business.
Yeah.
And so I'd really like to try and make the parallel for our listeners between your successful franchisees, your successful business owners, and perhaps that evolution that they've made or the change in thinking perhaps that's led them to get better results than those who are kind of stuck on the tools as a retailer.
Yeah, it's a ripping question. Was that one is something I'm constantly in dialogue with our franchisees about. I would say Totally Workwear is it's like a marketplace. You know, we have various age demographics, background demographics, points in time of where their journey is at as a business owner. New up and coming business owners who are extremely tech savvy, who are talking omni-channel and range rationalization and consumer journeys and all these words that half of the other audience are going, what did you just say? And what does that acronym mean? And so we really got to simplify the language and the education piece first. And we constantly add ourselves to do that because you can get caught up in it. The expert in my trade versus the expert running a business, self-reflection is always a good place to start. Know what I know what I don't know, and be honest with myself about that, and maybe have a continuous like improvement mindset, you know, something that sort of says, do I need to do all of the stuff myself? Should I be thinking about using my business and employing experts to be the experts in that area? And then should I be running my business rather than running in my business, or worse, my business running me, which is often what we have. Tired business owners, and there's lots of them, going, I am putting the stuff on the coat hangers. I am putting the data in the computer. I am trying to do the bookkeeping. I am trying to do the business development. You can't do it all. Start with that premise and then go, right, well, what does a system like this offer me? How could I leverage the tools from the experts that are in it, because they've been doing this for quite a while, and then use my time to do what I'm good at? It's like the basic opportunity cost, right? I sell lots of stuff to tradies. I have no idea how to do stuff. Can't build a back deck, got a back garden, then I chopped the pathway up 10 years ago, still chopped up, right? So don't try and do stuff that's not your core skill set. Know what that is and then improve yourself. Like, if you want to broaden education and improvement and finding other people you can reference off, I mean, often talk about power of a network with our group, because you join a network for that reason. Don't join the club and then sit in the bleachers and watch the game and don't participate. Get in, get involved, get to know those successful operators and pick their brains. People like coaching. People like helping. It's innate if you've got good people. How you go about it, how you ask for it, it's a different thing. But, you know, the successful ones work on their business. The earlier operations require you to work in it. As you scale, you can take a business from, I'll try and put it in maybe your audience's terms, one truck to two trucks, right, or one truck to three trucks. But then you can't scale yourself. The business needs to be scalable.
Yeah.
You only still have the 8 hours in a day. You still need to sleep and eat and breathe and have a family and a life. So if you don't think about scaling your business and putting the pillars in place to enable that platform for growth, which is a big narrative in where we are now, build the platform and then grow. Growth for growth's sake isn't necessarily good. Revenue for revenue's sake doesn't mean profit as an outcome. And then look around for examples that you can model. Often in business, and this is a weird dichotomy, people think you need to do something completely different to win. You don't. You just need to do it better than the next guy or girl in whatever your chosen thing is. And therefore, model yourself off some other people, model your business or some other stuff, borrow stuff, plug it in, but build something that can scale beyond you, the human. And that's the biggest trouble I see in lots of businesses, our own included. One store to three stores, you're not running a one-store operation anymore that relies on you to do everything. You're now running a business and you need to have the right people around you, HR support, finance advice, good accountancy. Hopefully you don't need a good lawyer if you have those first three things beforehand, but you need to have those experts around you. And a lot of people I see sort of very interested in the money the business is making them, thinking about how much they can extract from the business, which is very short-term thinking. If you take a more medium-term view, you might have been better to spend some of that money and have a little less profit in year one and two to have strong partnerships. And that's not always suppliers and customers, Nick, as you mentioned before. There's also all the service providers around you. That need to give you the HR advice and the payroll advice. And running your own business is hard. Just is. Otherwise, everyone would be doing it. So having maybe a system behind you that helps with some of those things allows you to then use the expert bit that you had mentioned before was to your competitive advantage, rather than getting bogged down in stuff that you're just not an expert at.
Absolutely.
Try to be. Yeah.
So Troy, obviously a bit of change going on for Totally Workwear. What's the future look like for you guys over the next year or two?
Yeah, look, it is an exciting time. It's when you've been sort of working away in the lab and you're trying to keep things sort of under wraps, and then you have this emerging sort of moment where people start to see the brand in the wild. They start to see the stores looking different to what they have. They see a digital experience or a marketing outcome that's different. We've been working on building that platform, a lot of the stuff I just talked to you about. We feel like we've got a really strong platform now. We're very fortunate we're coming in with a strong platform off of 30 years of history too. So we're not sort of resting on our laurels. Now we want sustained, profitable growth. And really clear those words. Sustained is a journey. It's not an overnight I had a big boom during COVID, like lots of construction businesses, but that doesn't underpin long-term growth. In fact, it probably can create some short-term headaches. That profitable growth is super important. Like I said before, growth for growth's sake doesn't help anybody, nor does revenue for revenue. We see an opportunity to expand the footprint. We're at 90 stores today. We feel like it could be considerably more than that. We have some gaps across Australia where our footprint isn't the strongest, but we feel like our value proposition is. And so with that in mind, we want to sort of tell some people that might be interested, whether they're running other businesses or thinking about what the next 10 to 20 years looks like for them. We're a long-term business. We've been here for 30. We'll be here for another 20 plus. We're backed by a couple of 100-year-old brands in King Gianyaka. So we're going nowhere. And that stability and investment certainty is something that I want potential investors to understand. If you think about a business like this, think about it as something you can build on over the next 10 to 20 years of your working life and potentially have a succession plan for other generations involved in. We're super big on making sure people understand that narrative. It's not growth for growth's sake. When you look at the current climate, if we're out there diving into every left, right, and center thing, we're probably not being responsible. But the economy will turn. It does this, has these cycles. It will come out the other side of it. And a lot of successful businesses in my experience, before me, make their competitive leaps in a downturn. They set themselves ready for that next upturn. Yep. Hopefully we're a consideration for people thinking about where to invest their future into something that's ready to be able to take those growth steps, and they can benefit along the way.
Mm. Good advice for any business owner, Troy. It's easy to think that what applies for bigger business, and despite being a collection of small to medium businesses, you guys are obviously a pretty big player. I think it's easy for our listeners to just dismiss what works for you guys and say, oh, well, that's fine for them. That doesn't work for me with my two employees and my, $1 million of turnover. But they absolutely do apply. It's just scaling it back to, a size that's appropriate for you as an individual trade business owner. Troy, I normally ask a question, but I'm going to ask you a different one today. I usually ask the same question. Nick doesn't know how to ask this question. I'm going to ask you for a prediction, mate. You talked a bit about the economy, and obviously you sit in a different space to a lot of our guests that we have here on the show. I love a bit of economics. What's your crystal ball telling you about the next 6 months, especially for the trades, mate? You guys obviously talk to a lot of your customers.
Yeah.
What are you thinking for the rest of this year?
Yeah, look, I'd love to predict the grand final winners and tell you it's all going to be okay. Also, an economics background was, so we'll probably have another chat about that another time. But look, it is going to be hard, and it is hard, right? So our B2B trades, the larger scale contract businesses or the government money and that kind of thing, still ticks along. Typically, in an economic downturn, there's lots of stimulus packages being thrown at everybody. So there's still construction going on. But it's starting to bite, and the inflationary pieces has definitely hurt everybody from cost of living to fixed contracts at certain rates that now have components that were way more than what they ever anticipated to be. And I'm sure that's not lost on your audience. At a retail level, which typically would be the best indicator of residential tradies, so the tradies with the 1 and 2 or the 5 or 10 type outcomes doing the more resi jobs. We're actually pretty stable. There's pockets where it's tough. There's pockets where the socioeconomic area lives closer to the edge than other pockets. So that's pretty normal, I think. But it's holding steady. It's doing what it has done in years gone by. In fact, it may be a fraction up. So I still feel like those tradies that are doing those small, medium type jobs, there's work around. There's people still wanting to get stuff done. Maybe don't watch the news as much, or maybe don't listen to it as much.
Good advice, mate.
Yeah.
Telling my 80-year-old mum that, but she can't help herself.
Yeah, the idea of crystal balling can get you into trouble, and there's a pretty simple economic theory that does suggest that sentiment actually creates the outcome. Maybe call me an optimist or a glass half full kind of person, but the more you believe what you hear and what you read and the more you worry about how that's going to impact your business, they are all negative hours that you are not putting positive energy into whatever your enterprise is. Change the narrative a little bit in your own mind. It doesn't mean the economy's going to not sort of affect you, of course, but like worry time, what is it? It's dead time, right? Yep. So productivity suggests spend less time worrying.
Absolutely.
More time doing, but think about now what you're doing to set yourself up for when that comes better, because it will, and you want to be positioned for that. Mm. Is it going to be a magic pill in the next 6 months? No, I don't think so. You got to look at cycles in numbers of years, I think, more so than in 6 month increments. It's the same with running a business, like profit dividends, running quarter to quarter, public listed businesses tend to create pretty bad management decisions.
Yeah.
Long-term lenses or medium to long-term lenses, you know, think the next 5 years or 2 to 5, and then 5 to 10, a simple horizon view of your strategy, might have you feeling a little more optimistic where you're going than maybe stuck in the immediacy of, God, fuel was expensive yesterday, which is true, and so was food.
Yep, 100%, mate. Awesome advice, Troy. Love it. Love that last comment too about, where we put our worry time. Mate, obviously people know where to find Totally Workwear. They're just going to go and check out their local store. So yep. That's pretty easy. And Troy, just want to thank you for being on the show, mate. It's been a great chat. It's always nice to get an insight into some of those businesses that are serving our listeners and serving the trades. So obviously we would suggest that everybody gets along to their local Totally Workwear store to buy their next round of boots or fashionable tradie pants. I look at the young guys these days and the young girls actually, and workwear used to be blues and that was it. back in my old man's day.
Yeah.
It's a real thing was the walk down the hallway that used to just be getting out to work. Now it's a glance in the mirror and is the ink showing properly? Is the shirt sort of right? I haven't got the biceps for it, but thanks, mate. Look, it's been a real pleasure. Obviously it's likely that a Totally Workwear near you. That's great. But also, if you're thinking about another option within the trade sector, you might not have ever considered something like this, but you and people like you either in roles or in, as franchisees are a perfect fit. I mean, literally our CVP, really that value proposition sits around, we exist for the workers. That's it. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
Right. So, hopefully there's some opportunity for investment there as well.
Awesome. Thanks again, Troy.
Thanks, Nick.
Appreciate your insights.
Pleasure.
See you soon.